Hi, and welcome back to Equity Tutors. Today we're going to start a new module about genetics, biodiversity and classification. This module is going to be split over a couple of lessons, and I'm going to start today by going over the first part of this module, which is going to be genetic diversity and how this genetic diversity is introduced into organisms. Okay, so let's just get straight into it. So you remember that Amelia previously taught a lesson on how the genetic code works and how it codes for protein. So I'm going to briefly review some of that now and then go into a bit more depth. The important thing to know about DNA is that DNA is a triplet code. So DNA is made up of nucleotides, and these are the A, T, C, and G. And a group of three nucleotides is what codes for one amino acid. And if you remember from our biological molecules module, amino acids are what make up proteins. So we can think of the DNA sequence as a sentence, and each three letters makes up a word. So depending on what three letters are together, you will code for different amino acids, which will then be put into the polypeptide chain to make the protein. We call these groups of three bases a codon, and there are 20 different amino acids that can make up protein. So with the four different base pairs that we have, the A, T, C, and G, with the triplets, there are a lot of different possibilities for those triplets. However, there are only actually 20 amino acids. So we call the genetic code degenerate, which means that there's a lot of redundancy. So therefore, one amino acid could be coded for by several different codons. So for example, glutamic acid can be coded for by GAA or by GAG. So either of those codons would cause a glutamic acid to be added to the polypeptide chain. So this is important to know, because I'm now going to talk about mutations, and understanding this is really key to understanding what happens when things change in the sequence. A genetic mutation is a change in the sequence of base pairs. So this may or may not result in a change in the protein that is being formed. So I'll go into that in a bit more detail in a minute. But the important thing to know is that mutations happen all the time. So mutations happen in the DNA, and we have different mechanisms that we have in the cells that go around and check that these mutations are not passed on, and that the cells that have these mutations do undergo apoptosis. If you'll remember from our previous lessons, when this isn't done correctly, then this can lead to things like cancer, where mutations are passed on to the daughter cells. As I said, mutations in the DNA sequence may or may not change the polypeptide sequence. So sometimes they will change the amino acid, and sometimes they won't. And even if they do change the amino acid, sometimes that amino acid change won't cause too much effect on the structure of the protein overall, and it will not actually change the function of the protein. But other times it will, and it will have a very negative effect on the protein and its function. We can split genetic mutations broadly into three different categories. First of all, we can have insertions. And insertions are where a new base gets put into a sequence. For this, I would really recommend going to either watch the YouTube video or look at the PDF document to understand what I mean. But what happens with an insertion is everything gets shifted along one position. So if we imagine we have a sequence of three amino acids, so that will be nine base pairs. Imagine we have TAT, CTT, AGT. The first one, TAT, is coding for a tyrosine. If we then have an insertion after the T, instead of saying TAT CTT, it actually says TAT ACTT, then what has happened is the triplet of the leucine, which is the CTT, has been moved along. So instead of CTT, now it would read ACT. And that T on the end has been pushed into the next set of three. So the insertion of one base can change the codon and therefore can change what amino acids are coded for. And as you can see, this doesn't just affect the one codon where the insertion is taking place. It actually shifts the frame of all of the subsequent amino acids. So this can have a massive effect on the amino acid sequence and the polypeptide that is formed. Similarly, we can have deletions. So again, deletions are then when insertion, so instead of a base being put in, we're actually taking a base out. So in our example before, if we had the TATCTT and then we got rid of, we had a deletion of that A, it would then be TTC as our first codon and then TT whatever for the second codon. So again, you can see that this deletion has changed the sequence of the codons and therefore the sequence of the amino acids. However, as we said before, because there is redundancy in the genetic code, some of these changes to the codons may not actually result in a change in the amino acid being coded for. So it might not have such a big effect on the polypeptide chain as you might think. And then we can have another type of mutation, which is a substitution. So this is where one base is just swapped for another one. So instead of TATCTT, it might be GATCTT. So these mutations will actually only change the codon in which the substitution is taking place. So it will only change the one amino acid, and it doesn't have a knock-on effect to the rest of the polypeptide chain like the insertions and deletions do. So if the mutation doesn't cause any change in the amino acid sequence, then we call this a silent mutation. And this is because multiple codons can code for the same amino acid. We then have missense mutations. So this is where that one substitution will just cause a change in that single amino acid that the substitution takes place in. And then we have things called nonsense mutations. And this is where we get a premature stop codon in the sequence. So the way that the polypeptide chain is produced, we have things called start and stop codons. So a start codon is when the DNA is translated. When it reads those first set of three base pairs, it will say, okay, this is the start of a protein. And then similarly at the end, when it reads a certain codon, it will terminate the amino acid chain. What a nonsense mutation can do is it can change one of the amino acids into a stop codon, and this means that the protein will be truncated and will be shorter than it should be. This can be very detrimental to the function of protein and also to the health of the individual with this mutation. So an example of this is with cystic fibrosis, where you have a nonsense mutation which causes the truncation of a protein. The important thing to know though is that although it seems like there can be a lot that can go wrong, most mutations actually do not change the sequence of the polypeptide, or they only change it so slightly that the function of it is not affected. But sometimes you do get changes in the polypeptide and the tertiary structure in particular of the polypeptide, and this will reduce the protein's ability to perform its normal functions. And as we know, this is really important in the function of protein. So if it's not the right shape, it might not be able to perform as it should, and this can have major effects on our health. So as I said before, these mutations do happen all the time, but there are certain things that can increase the amount of mutations that we get. So we call these things mutagens, and these are some things that you will have heard of before, such as UV light, so from the sun, ionizing radiation, which includes things like x-rays, and also some chemicals and things like that can cause excessive rates of mutation in cells. An important thing to remember is although these mutations do occur frequently, our cells do have checks in place to ensure that these mutations don't get passed on to the daughter cells, and these include proofreading enzymes that check that the sequence is correct, and then also we have DNA repair enzymes which can come in and fix any changes that they detect. So although these mutations are happening very frequently, normally our body is very good at finding these changes and stopping them being passed on to the daughter cells. So we've just spoken about how there can be variation and mutation in the DNA sequence, but now I'm going to briefly talk about how there can be also mutations in chromosome number. And I did cover this in the previous module briefly, so I won't spend too long on this, and I would recommend you do go back to listen to those lessons on meiosis and mitosis in the cells module if this is not familiar to you. As we know, in our body, each of our somatic cells has 46 chromosomes, and that is made up of 23 pairs of chromosomes. So during meiosis, if the two copies of the chromosome fail to pull apart, we call this non-disjunction, and this can result in the gametes ending up with an extra copy of a chromosome or no copy of one of the chromosomes. So if one parent has this non-disjunction happening, then their gametes might end up with either no copies of that chromosome or two copies of that chromosome. And as we know, when fertilization happens, the gametes of the two individuals come together to give a complete set of chromosomes. So you get one copy of each chromosome from each parent. If you have two copies of a chromosome from one parent, and then that comes together with the single copy from the other parent, that results in you having three copies of that one chromosome, and we call that trisomy. And an example of this is with Down syndrome, where they have trisomy 21. If one of the gametes has no chromosome, and that comes together with the other gamete that has one chromosome, then that's going to result in a cell that only has one copy of the chromosome instead of the normal two, and we call that monosomy. These are what we are talking about when we say mutations in chromosome number. So this is having a different number of chromosomes in our cells to what there should be. So normally you should have two copies of each chromosome, but you can end up with either three or one copy of the chromosome. To really understand exactly when and how these non-disjunctions happen, I would recommend you go back and listen to the meiosis lesson, which was part of the cells module. I'm now going to also review some of the things that I spoke about in that lesson, but not to such depth. So if you haven't already listened to that, or if it's not fresh in your mind, do go back and listen. The purpose of meiosis, which is the cell division that happens with the gametes, is to produce daughter cells that are genetically unique. And this happens in two main ways. The first way is that it happens due to the independent assortment of the chromosomes during meiosis, and it also happens via crossing over. So this is where non-sister chromatids can swap bits, so bits can break off of one chromatid and it will join to the other, and vice versa. Again, do go back and listen to the previous lesson because I go into much more detail on this there. The reason we're talking about mutations and meiosis and the separation of chromosomes is because this lesson is all about genetic variation. Having genetically different offspring is advantageous for natural selection. I'm going to go into more on that shortly. But as I just said, crossing over and the independent assortment of the chromosomes causes different alleles, so that's versions of a gene, to be present in the gametes. So as we said, from meiosis we get very different daughter cells. So you get four daughter cells coming from meiosis, and each one of those will be unique. So every time meiosis occurs, you get daughter cells that are going to be unique from each other. These then combine with the gametes from the other parent, which are also unique, which means that the zygote that is formed will have a unique combination of alleles compared to everyone else and also to their siblings, even if they do come from the same parents. So now that I've talked a bit about how mutations happen and how genetic diversity is introduced, we're now going to go on to talk about genetic diversity in general and how this is beneficial for a species. Organisms within a species will have very similar genomes. However, different individuals will have different DNA, even if they're from the same species or even if they're siblings. So we call these small differences in the sequences of our DNA genetic variation. And genetic variation, when it's passed down, causes something called genetic diversity, which means that the members of a species are genetically different to each other. So genetic diversity is the number of different alleles of a gene in a population. So if you remember, alleles are kind of a version of a gene. So you might have a brown eye allele or a green eye allele. And we can call these different different alleles that are present in a population, the gene pool, and you might have heard that used before. Mutations result in generation of new alleles, and this adds to the diversity of the gene pool. So having a new allele could be good, it could be bad, or it could have no effect on the phenotype of the organism. So the phenotype is the observed characteristics of an individual. So its genotype is the genes it has, and the phenotype is what this actually translates to in the individuals. New alleles might not always cause a phenotypic difference. So genetic diversity is really important in a population, and if we don't have genetic diversity, that species is very prone to extinction. The reason for this is because it's very important for natural selection, and I'm going to go on to that in a bit more detail in a minute. But having differences in your genotype, so having different alleles, will result in differences in the phenotypes of the organisms that make up that species. And as our environment is always changing, having differences in the phenotype will allow for some of those individuals to survive better if there is a change in the environment. And we call this change a selection pressure. This means it's good to have a lot of genetic diversity in a population because it means that they are less susceptible to changes in their environment, because at least some of the population should be able to withstand that change. So we say that members of species that are better suited to these changes in the environment have a higher fitness, and the fitness can be defined as its ability to survive and pass on its alleles to its offspring. Basically, the more genetic diversity you have within a population, the better it can adapt to changes in its environment. Some of the principles of natural selection are that mutations happen randomly in a population, and these cause new alleles of a gene to form. Some of these alleles will be beneficial for the individual in the population, and this can be particularly true if there has been a change in the environment. So possession of this allele may cause the individual to have an increased chance of survival, and they will also have an increased reproductive success. So that means how much and how many offspring they can produce. If the animal is more likely to reproduce, then its alleles will be passed on to the next generation, and over time these alleles will become more prevalent in the population, and the population will be better suited to the environment. I'm going to give an example. So imagine we have giraffes, and one day there is a mutation and the offspring of one of these giraffes is born with a really long neck. That giraffe can then reach the taller parts of the higher parts of the tree, so it can get more nutrients, and this means that it survives better and it can reproduce more. So over time, its offspring will be more likely to reproduce as well, because they'll be able to reach the better leaves. And then over time, this will become more prevalent in the population until you get to a point where all of the giraffes have this long neck, because it was beneficial for them, and any that didn't have the long neck wouldn't have reproduced as much. So natural selection is how evolution happens. So it's how an organism becomes better adapted to its environment over time. Remember that the selective pressure that causes the natural selection is a change in the environment, which allows members of a species with certain alleles to survive better in that new environment than others. You also need to know some other factors that can affect the frequency of alleles in a population. And the first one is called the founder effect. When a small subset of a population gets separated to form a new population, and in this new population there will only be some of the alleles that were present in the complete old population. So we can think of this as if there are a group of dogs on one main island, and some get carried to a new smaller island. Only some of the alleles will be transported with them, so the change in the allele frequency within the population may occur in a different direction to what the original population would be doing, and this is completely up to chance. So what alleles end up with the new population is completely up to chance. So this is called the founder effect. So you can think of this as that a smaller population has gone and found a new place to live, and they have only taken some of the alleles with them. The next thing is genetic drift. If there is a small population, then over time only some alleles may be passed on purely by chance. So this is not because some of the alleles are more suited to the environment, it's just purely by chance because the population is so small. Over time, the allele frequencies in the small population will move and there'll be certain alleles will become more frequent, and we call this genetic drift. And then finally, we have this thing called the bottleneck effect. This happens when a previously large population suffers a rapid fall in numbers. And this can be due to things like natural disasters or poaching. And this reduces the genetic diversity in the population. And this means that some alleles will be lost. And therefore, when the surviving individuals end up breeding and reproducing, they will be doing so with a smaller group of individuals. And therefore, some of these alleles will be lost and the genetic diversity in the new population will be much smaller than it was in the original population. Okay, so now that we've learned what a selection pressure is and how allele frequency can change, we're now going to talk about different types of selection. So there are two types of selection we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about stabilizing and directional. So stabilizing selection is where natural selection keeps a certain allele frequency quite constant over multiple generations. So things stay the same, the animals stay the same in the species unless there is a major change in the environment. A good one for this is height. Stabilizing selection selects for the intermediate height. So we have middle height people. It's very rare to get very short people or very tall people. So that is what we call stabilizing selection, where the allele for a certain thing remains quite constant within our population. The other type of selection I'm going to talk about is directional selection. So this is where there is a gradual change in the allele frequency over multiple generations. And this is normally when there is a new selection pressure, or if there is a new allele that has randomly appeared in the population that gives those individuals an advantage. A good example for this is antibiotic resistant bacteria. You will have heard that using antibiotics a lot can cause there to be antibiotic resistance. So some of the bacteria in a population will naturally have resistance to an antibiotic due to mutations. And if you apply the selection pressure of an antibiotic, those individuals with that mutation will survive and they will go on to reproduce and pass down those alleles. So over time, that antibiotic resistance allele will become more frequent in the population. So this is a directional selection. So over time, the frequency of that allele will increase. For the last part of today's lesson, I'm just going to go over exactly what some environmental adaptations could be for a species. And just to really hammer in this point about natural selection, so natural selection will either select for a favourable allele or select against an unfavourable allele. So if there is a selection pressure, so a change in the environment, if a certain allele makes you worse at surviving in that environment, natural selection will select against that allele, so that allele will become less frequent in the population so that the species will be better suited to that environment. And if there is a favorable allele, then individuals with that allele will reproduce and that allele will become more frequent in the population and allow the species to be better suited to the environment. So the outcome is the same, but it can either be alleles can either be selected for or selected against. And all of this is to allow a species to be better adapted to their environment. We can basically split up adaptations into anatomical, physiological, and behavioural. Anatomical will be new structures or features in the animal, so could be that the fur colour changes, which helps the animal to be more camouflaged in the environment so that it isn't killed as much by its predators. We then have physiological adaptations, so these are things that affect the biological processes within an organism. So this could be like the bacterial antibiotic resistance that we spoke about earlier. So bacteria that have the antibiotic resistance will survive and then they will go on to reproduce. And then we have behavioral adaptations. This is the way that an organism behaves. So this could be animals that form a pack could survive better than those that don't. don't form packs, and then over time they will begin to always form packs. Okay, so that's everything for today's lesson. So what we've mainly gone over is how genetic diversity is introduced into a population, and this can be via genetic mutations and also introduced via the process of meiosis. And then we spoke about how genetic diversity is beneficial for a species and how this can lead to adaptation through natural selection. So really make sure you go over all of this and that it all makes sense, because we are going to be building on these concepts in the rest of the module. And do remember to go back to the cells module and check out the meiosis lesson to really understand what's going on there as well.
Thank you so much for listening. Remember, you can access additional content on our Patreon page by searching for Equity Tutors, where we have a second 30-minute lesson every week, plus monthly bonus content. You can also find us on most social media platforms. We will keep you updated on new content, and you can find us there by searching for Equity Tutors UK. Please like, share, subscribe, and comment wherever you are listening. And if you're enjoying, please leave a review. Bye.
Bye.